Congratulations.
You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Maysoon Wazwaz, with a cold.
So we put up the bonus episode on Saturday for the Root Division show audio tour that we made. This is the last we'll speak of it, but just know that that's up and the show is only up for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So you want to listen to that, get in there, do the little tour. It's a tour. People have been having a little trouble understanding.
What do you mean?
When I think of an audio tour at an art place, a pretty clear picture, well, sound picture comes to my mind.
People think it could be an audio tour of anything.
Like a street walk?
Yeah. That it's not, I think people don't think it needs to be a museum audio tour.
It was
a
little
more
out of the box.
I got that question a few times on Saturday, and it was interesting because some people almost acted slightly disappointed. Like they thought an audio tour of the show would just be like a boring museum audio tour kind of a thing, like straight ahead. And I was like, no, it's really good. You should really listen to it. It's fucking hysterical.
Not to toot our own horn.
Which, you know me, I never do, right?
You are a horn tutor.
I'm not a horn tutor. I'm used to tooting other people's horns.
You will bring those horns SAT scores right up. Moving right along, we got a really interesting text message from a listener this week. This is a little bit of an interesting one, Maysoon. I feel sometimes that our listeners can get a little passive aggressive.
Sure can. We all can is a thing.
Well, that's definitely true, but do you think it's because this is an arts and culture podcast we attract it more passive aggressive?
Are you saying that artists are more passive aggressive?
I'm saying the art world breeds a kind of attitude.
Some people would say that it's because we're on the West Coast and not in New York, where we'd be much more straightforward and in your face if we were in New York.
So here's a text we got in from Kevin. Do you know of a smart, cool, hip way to get artwork into the world? And then I was like, what the hell are you talking about?
Did you say that to him?
I was like, hi, Kevin. Because he has texted him before. So.
Oh, okay.
And I saw his name. You're an artist. I'm an artist. I thought maybe we could share tips. And I was like getting into shows at hip places or like making up new ways to circulate art? And he's like, yes. Here's the part where I'm kind of like, come on. He's like, I've been listening to a lot of stuff recently and your show lost priority since I'm not in that area. I'm still a fan and will check it out if you do a show on this.
Fuck that.
Isn't that kind of harsh?
It's just stupid.
I haven't been listening to this show, but if you do a show just for me,
then maybe
then I'll
will.
Listen to it.
How are you ever going to know, dude?
Anyhow, thanks for that writing, Kevin.
I have to say
sorry we're making fun of you.
It's okay if you don't listen to the show, Kevin, honestly.
But don't tell us about it.
Yeah, it's like, what's that supposed to do? Are you threatening us? Are you bribing us? Good fucking luck. Come on now. That's not very nice. Oh, I was thinking something like parking lot art fair. It's like, you just got to come up with that shit. It's not, I mean, there's no formula. Figure something out.
I was re-looking back at the photos from the pinhole. There was a show out in the forest. Yeah, like Mooney, KRM Mooney was in it and all these. It was a really bizarre show. Some of the work I really liked though. But they just put a show together out at like some weird wilderness.
And who went to that? Bears?
Art people.
They're friends.
Yeah.
Cool.
But it was cool, new, and hip.
Mm-hmm.
Forest shows are really in. Let's just tell them what's in. Let's not bogart the keys to the kingdom, Maysoon. What's really cool? Shows in the sewer.
Shows in the
ocean.
You
want to go underground.
How about if you did a show on a barge on its way to China?
Mm-hmm.
That could be cool.
That's very of the now.
Yeah.
Who would be commenting on globalization,
commodification,
international markets,
capitalism,
international waters.
Yep.
Okay, what else, Maysoon?
Maybe a hot air balloon?
That's so like 2010.
It's just one person.
No,
okay.
2010.
How about a blimp? I'm just trying to think of like air, land, water, like what other?
Not the internet, but the intranet. Go to like the Social Security building where they have their own intranet and just have a digital show that only people that work for the federal government can see.
Good luck getting into that. Hopefully you know some hackers.
Hey, it's cooler the more exclusive.
I definitely think having a garden show in front of the White House would be pretty hip.
May soon. Somebody said to
clearly, me, Kevin, I am not cool, new, and hip. So
we're
that's
being
cool.
such an asshole to Kevin, but I don't give a shit. Somebody said on Saturday at the opening, they described our show as snarky. And I was like, we're not snarky, but now the last 5 minutes just
I don't know. I guess I don't feel like Kevin put that much effort into his text. So what are we supposed to do about that? I don't know.
I don't think that was any. I don't think the effort level. I think it was offensive subject matter. Yeah, I don't like. I don't think of us as snarky. I think of us as sassy. We would like to formally apologize to Kevin.
Kevin, was that a joke?
Were you
being
kidding?
Funny? You know, it's hard when people write because we don't. We
okay,
can't
wait.
Hear
let's
the inflection.
Can we re-answer that
no,
question
hell
as if
no,
we're going to
no.
take it seriously?
No, I think both. I know. No.
Chelsea Pegram has some programming that she does at her studio where she has like a little window display that's basically like an exhibition like every week or every month or whatever.
So I guess you could you could create your own show or have your own show space.
Yeah, which I'm sure Kevin has probably thought about that. So Kevin, just run with it.
I also used
maybe you just needed some encouragement.
Yeah. What's your take on like the cafe art show? I mean, I know it's not ideal, but I think if you're just starting out.
But like, what does that really do for you?
It gets you something on your fucking resume.
That works best if you are do a whole bunch of cafe shows somewhere and then move cities.
Right. They're like, wow, this person had a lot of shows in this city.
Yeah.
Right. Because then no one will know. No exactly. one knows. I see what you're saying.
Also, give us a call or a text in to 419-351-6606. But also remember that that is my personal phone number. So if you're texting... You're texting a human, me. Well, anyhow, there's a new Ken Baker.
Ken Baker.
He
just
retired
from the SF Chronicle.
Mason, do you remember we had a talk? We recorded us talking about when Ken Baker retired and how we were like, what's going to happen with no old white man to tell us what to think about art? And then,
and
sure
then,
enough,
lo and behold,
here's the new Ken Baker.
The new SF Chronicle arts writer is Charles DeMarais. The current president of SFAI.
So just speculating from all the rumors and bullshit that we've heard, SFAI seems like they didn't know this was happening.
Is that right?
That they're having planning meetings now to figure out what the fuck to do.
Oh, no.
Isn't that weird?
That's
I'm sure that's not true or that they'll say it's not true.
SFAI, is that true? Let us know. How are you guys doing over there? They'll be fine.
What do you think about this odd choice, Maysoon?
Well, I guess I was just disappointed in that. I was hoping it would be not another older white man, I guess. To be honest, I was hoping for a little more something different, something new and refreshing.
Yep.
Maybe someone from even outside the Bay Area would have been exciting to me. I don't know.
People are making a big deal about bias, that he'll be biased for SFAI students.
Yeah.
He's worked with a lot of different arts institutions and...
Right. You didn't seem to think that was much of an issue.
I just feel like anybody they picked, if they're from the Bay Area, would have some connection
have some
to somewhere. I think it's a little weird and antiquated how much weight we put on this one newspaper writer, as if that's the only person writing and yeah. the only person whose opinion matters. But I guess
but
it is a wide audience.
Amy LeDuc from the Berkeley Arts Center had a good point, a good sort of perspective on that.
Amy was saying that it gets a wide audience, that has a wider distribution than all the like little niche art publications that we have.
It's almost like it was to be expected.
Yeah.
That it would be a choice that none of us were expecting.
Or that none of us
none
would
of
like.
Us were excited about. It's just like, it's the fucking Chronicle. It's like, it's the main paper of the Bay Area. It's like, they have a status quo to fill. You know what I mean? Like, they are probably just going to review the large arts institutions anyhow. For the larger public audience, they're yeah. not going to be interviewing, and they're not going to be going to like Alter Space or et al. And writing expansive articles on those shows, probably. But I don't think any of us were expecting that. So part of me is sort of like, I think Patricia Maloney almost kind of got to this at one point. She was just like, this is a waste of time for us to even be discussing this right now. It's like, what do we expect from the Chronicle? I mean, I'm going to be excited. I'm going to read his articles. Because I'm going to be curious. It's like, according to some of the articles I've read about this choice, that like he hasn't really published anything or written anything for the past like 30 years. It's like, what does that mean? That's kind of wild to me. Like, how did he? I don't understand. Like,
I think the big thing that people are upset about is there were other, like, it's the one of the only like actually paying, like you can make your living off of this job. Mm-hmm. And that there were other people that maybe were more deserving And it would be nice to have.
Well, he's going from being a president of a fucking college, a probably very well paid
six figure
job, to, yeah, it's kind of like, can we spread the wealth, people? Yeah, I mean, definitely. Yeah. I agree with that.
We're out here in beautiful Oakland, California, in a home, the home of Courtney Fink.
Hi, Maysoon. Hi, Kate.
Well, P.S. Courtney Fink was the champion and captain
and director
of Southern Exposure, just recently stepped down. If you'd just like to say a little bit about that transition, what you're doing now, alleviate the fears and concerns of people like me who think that now the San Francisco is going to fall off into the ocean.
It's not going to, Kate. So don't worry. Yeah. I mean, I'm still kind of in the transition, I would say. It's been going on almost all year. We were sort of in a quiet transition before we announced the news in July. And actually this month of September, I'm still doing some sort of phasing out and consulting and working with the interim director and the staff to just wrap up some more work. It's not the kind of job where it's just like, goodbye, it's my last day, you know, just because of how it works there. So yeah, it's only been about a week and a half. And in that time, I actually went to LA to go to my sister's wedding. So believe it or not, I've actually been pretty busy with family stuff. The board is launching an executive search at the end of September. And they imagine it will probably take 4 to 6 months before they have somebody in place to start in the first part of 2016. If you know, they really want to do a pretty comprehensive national search. And I think that involves some assessment work they want to do. Like, what does the organization need now? What type of leader would be the best type of leader to take it forward?
Now, who is that person going to be?
You know, I don't know, because I think part of what the organization needs to do moving forward is really think about what they need post-Courtney, right? And I'm so associated with the organization. I think it's kind of nice for them to have a little bit of space and time to think about, you know, what their future needs are going to be, because they're going to be the ones moving it forward. So, you know, I was the director for 13 years, and the city and the art community and the funding climate have changed so dramatically that I think the needs of SOEX have changed so much. You know, I was 29 years old when I was hired, and there weren't a lot of candidates for the job, and it was a real kind of turnaround moment where the organization was kind of not in good shape and most likely wasn't going to stay open. And so coming in at the time, my job was really to secure the organization and make sure it could succeed. But now it's actually five times bigger. Just the budget is five times bigger than it used to be. The staff is much bigger. The stakes are a lot higher. The climate is more challenging. So I think they're going to have to figure out, you know, what that's going to look like. I am known for being really kind of equally involved in the creative side of the organization as I am sort of on the finance, fundraising, business side. And I think it's pretty unusual to find someone who excels in both and is interested in both. So I think that's a big question, maybe, is, you know, what skill set are they looking for? And I don't know, actually. I don't know.
Do you think the way that organization is structured as far as the programs, do you think that will sort of stay the same? Or do you think some of that will also potentially shift?
I mean, I think our mission is so clear. And even this year, as we've been planning for this transition, it was just so obvious to us that what we do and our identity and what we're trying to support is really clear to us. And we're not questioning that at all. You know, Southern Exposure supports artists. And I think everyone feels really solid about our programs and our work. And none of that really is up for question at all. It's really just about what type of leadership do we need and what type of support do we need to keep that strong and thriving like it is right now. And leaving at a time when the organization was really strong was pretty intentional. You know, we have a really, 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 truly incredible team right now of staff, just super devoted, passionate, in it for the long haul, really leaders in their own right. And I really trust them. So, and I think they have a really clear sense of what the work is. So I don't really see that changing. I could imagine, you know, with leadership change comes change. So there's always going to be change. And that's like the only constant thing that we had at SOEX is change. you know, not everything is always changing. And that's actually part of what our job is to always be changing to the needs of artists. So any good director is going to have that in mind. And as artists and circumstances change, our programs are going to need to change. But our projects and exhibition program, that's sort of our core program, our founding program, that's not going anywhere. Our artists and education program, there's some great new ideas kind of in the planning right now. So I only see that getting stronger. And alternative exposure is not going anywhere. That's a really solid program. Next year, it's going to be its 10th anniversary. And the funders we have are super committed. And I don't really see that going away anytime soon. So no, I don't really see that changing.
Then the question still remains, why leave now?
That is a question that I've been asked every day for the last 5 months. It's hard to step away when the organization is in such great shape. And also, everyone who knows me knows this is like, this is my life's work and this is what I'm devoted to. And leaving doesn't mean I'm leaving this work. But it just felt like the right time for the organization and me. And the kind of person I am is not someone that's, I want what's best for the organization. And we did have a really solid position and staff team. And it just felt kind of like, why not try to make a change when the moment seemed really strong? Because we all have seen how challenging it's been for so many organizations to change and have things not go well. Like, there's a lot of case studies that could be written and made about all the organizations that basically, you know, closed during a transition. And so that was always something on my mind. And it's kind of like an existential question. I could stay at that job forever and stay at Southern Exposure forever because it's my dream job and it's such a great organization and I love it so much. But also, it's not healthy for organizations to have the same people there forever. And I was so lucky. I got to take that place through so much transition and growth and change. And it's pretty clear what the next set of changes might need to be. And it just seemed kind of like an exciting time for somebody new with a new vision to get to take that on. And I think the work that I've been doing, I'd like to see it grow to a larger scale. But that's a question I don't have an answer to. And part of why I left without another job, which also is, I think, a pretty brave thing to do because most people really want to have a plan. And people who know me know that I'm a planner and it's unusual for me to not have a plan. But I don't know how you translate 20 years of working at Artist Spaces into the next thing. And I was talking to some colleagues today. We're all in this field. None of us had an answer. Like, what do you do after you run an arts organization like Southern Exposure? There isn't really a path. There isn't a clear and obvious answer. So I imagine perhaps I'll need to invent my work moving forward if I really want to stay devoted to the field of visual artists and support for artists. And I need some time to figure out what that could look like. But I know for sure that I will continue to stay devoted to this field, to experimental spaces for artists and platforms of support for artists. And I really see that as my work for life. And I've been working on some nationally scaled projects that kind of address the issues that Southern Exposure is addressing locally. And I see the field as needing a lot of support, not just here, but around the country. So I have no doubt that the work is out there and I need to do it. I think would like to give myself a little bit of time to figure out what that could look like.
One of those projects you're working on is Common Field. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. I just had an all-day work session today with the co-director of Common Field, Stephanie Sherman. Common Field has actually started by a group of about five of us. We started talking about it in 2011, so this has been a pretty long conversation where we really felt like our field didn't have sort of a national identity and a national peer network and convening mechanism by which we could stay connected and talk about issues of the field. And we were all participants in this program by one of our funders, the Warhol Foundation, called the Warhol Initiative. And they would bring us together. It was like a capacity funding program that had every 3 years a convening. And that program concluded. And a lot of us thought, you know, this has been so instrumental in all of us being connected nationally that we really want to see it move forward. And so in 2012, we organized a national meeting of about 25 people. And since then, we've been trying to get this new entity off the ground. And the idea is it's a new national network for arts organizations and arts organizers to kind of connect the field and develop resources, research, and connectivity for the field. So our first national convening is later this week. This year, it's going to be in Minneapolis. It's an itinerant convening, so every year it will be in a different city. The National Common Field Group will partner with a city and a group of local organizations to create these convenings. But convenings are only one of the things that we're hoping to do. We're trying to create more of an identity and a face for the field and thinking and big picture thinking and understand how this field, which has been in existence for so long, still has so many challenges. And just the idea that we could create something as much bigger as a group than we could on our own. Because oftentimes the groups are so small and under-resourced and can't advocate necessarily effectively on their own. So it's sort of the idea of power in numbers. So yeah, we're all really excited. We have some great funders. It already feels like it has a lot of power behind it and a lot of supporters. And we have 300 people attending our first national convening, so it's pretty exciting.
Is that, I mean, do you have to be a member of Common Field, or how does that work as far as getting involved as an arts organization or arts organizer?
I think for the first one, since we're just really trying to get this off the ground, you didn't have to be a member. Anyone that attended is actually just being given a membership. But I think by the second convening next year, you don't have to be a member, but you'll get a discount. You know, the idea is, like, if you're a member, it's more affordable. It's all very affordable. The idea is this is very affordable. We have scholarships if you can't afford to come to the national meetup. Memberships are very, 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 like, $25, $50, $75. Yeah. You don't have to be part of an organization, but this is not an individual artist organization. It's really for people that are consider themselves organizers. I think it's really exciting. And for the next while, I'll be devoting a lot of my time to working on it. More of my time than I was.
I was wondering if you had advice for emerging arts professionals. I know a lot of people that are like fresh out of like CURP at CCA and stuff like that, that feel like the world is not their oyster.
When are you also not emerging?
If you could answer both those questions.
I don't really have an answer for the whole emerging, non-emerging thing. I never quite understood that paradigm. And I feel like for emerging organizers who are just getting started, I really always tell people, just do it. I mean, I think a lot of people want somehow a program or structure or some coaching on how to go start something. But I feel like the people who end up being willing just to take a risk, right? Risk capital. It's hard to take a risk in an expensive city. But the people who just are really determined to make something happen and they go out and, like you guys, you want to start a podcast and here you are, a year later, all these episodes behind you, you just are pretty determined to make it happen. I always feel like that's get involved in things that you appreciate. A big way that I got started was actually just volunteering in the groups and organizations that I thought were really inspiring and being around that culture. I always tell people just you have to participate. You have to get involved. Volunteering is also really effective. You can't be scared to ask for things that you want and need, like money and help. And I think if you're shy about that, it's going to be hard to pull something off. And involve all your friends and everyone you've ever met and ask them to help you. Mm-hmm. I still do. Everything I do, I'm still hitting. I mean, I have a little Facebook thread. The only reason I go on Facebook is to hit people up for stuff and things. It's called Courtney's Requests. Hashtag Courtney's Requests. It's a constant flow of I need this, I need that, I need you, I need help. You just can't be shy about asking for help or money.
Do you want to talk a little bit, because you've been in the Bay Area for so long and been so involved with all the nightmares and shenanigans? Give us some insight into what's happened, where we're at, and the future. Into the next 1,000 years.
You have so much faith in me, you guys. I'm really, it's a high expectations here. I don't know. I have lived here for 20 years. That's true. A little over. June was my 20-year anniversary. I don't know. I think everyone right now loves to try to predict what's going to happen in the next few years. Nobody really knows. I don't know. You know, I'm pretty excited to be living in Oakland. I've really loved being here and just, I'm pretty happy to be over here. It's been tough, I think, for me and a lot of people to see how things have changed. But I tend to have a more positive attitude about change than a lot of people, because I'm just maybe an optimist. I want to see the glass half full, the potential in new things. And I think people in the Bay Area tend to be a bit conservative about wanting things to stay the same forever. And I'm very depressed and sad about some of the things that we've lost, but I also, for me, the thing that keeps me going maybe is staying focused on what's possible. So what's possible is I think people have to be more inventive. I don't see a decline at all in independent organizing or arts organizing. There's just as much going on in the art community as there ever was. I think people feel a lot more, it's heavier. There's like a fraught fear feeling that people maybe are carrying around that's heavier, that kind of maybe makes things feel a little bit more ominous. And if you're here, you're fighting it out a little bit more than maybe 10 years ago. But I still see the potential and what's possible and how much is actually going on. And alternative exposure, that grant program, by the way, little plug, we have a deadline coming up next week, September 24th. Don't forget to get in your applications for Southern Exposure. We have had more applications in the last 2 years than we've ever had. And people keep saying there's not as much happening, everyone's left. It's not true. There's just as much going on as ever. I think it's just it's harder to access, maybe, or more exclusive. You have to know somebody. You know, living here for so long, you get used to everyone you know and like leaving. It's a very transitory city. And it's sad to kind of be, you know, I feel like now when I run into my really old friends, we have this kind of inside club of like, oh, you stuck it out too. You're here with me. We stayed. So there's sort of this insider kind of conversation that I have with friends who I've known for almost 20 years now and who are really committed to being here. And I guess I'm in that group. And even though there's a lot of people that need convincing about why the arts are important and why artists are important and why they should support that. And I believe that that conversation is something that I have. That's a conversation I have every day. And a lot of people want, I have a lot of colleagues who want to make their entire life's work just trying to convert people to understanding why supporting culture is important. I don't know if that will be what I do. Most likely not, but somebody's got to do it, right? Or we're not going to be able to continue this work that we're doing. I'm more worried, honestly, about sort of climate change and environmental catastrophe than I am about anything else, because that to me feels way more pressing and crisis level than anything else that's going on. And I tend to get a little overwhelmed by that stuff.
So you're new to Oakland, newish to Oakland. You got any favorite spots, like art spots you'd like to go to here?
Or that you'd recommend listeners go to? Yeah.
I mean, the problem is, even though I've lived here a year and a half, I'm not here. I was like always at work, basically. I like sleep here, basically. I come, I BART back with my bike. Sometimes I've got the car. It depends. I go to sleep. So I'm excited to have a little bit more. I'm actually not going to be in town much for the next couple of months. I'm sort of in and out of traveling a lot, and but I know a lot about what's going on here because of alternative exposure. And I'm a big fan of Crow's work and Jasmine Moorhead, and that space I think is really great, and she's totally transformed it in the last 6 months to be more of a residency, really active model, and I always go there. The Omni Commons to me is this fascinating, amazing, chaotic experiment of collectivism and anarchy and organizing, and I'm totally excited to see how that's going to take shape and all the collectives that are there. Bay Area Public School and all these print collectives and Publication Studio is now in Oakland. Real Time and Space, I think, is a great model, provides affordable space and shows to artists, and seems like they really have a good community going. I mean, there's so many. I live kind of near Interface Gallery, and I can never get there when they're actually open. So I've seen like 90% of their shows just by peeking in the window.
Same here.
Which, you know, I'm sorry, Interface. I love you guys. But yeah, I haven't really been able. So yeah, luckily, like the window experience isn't quite as good as going inside. Royal Nonesuch is right near where I live. I really like what they do. That's a great spot and really determined. And they've been open for a while now. I'm impressed. Yeah. And there's always like, there's a huge array of coming and going new places that I feel like there was just this great film festival, the Haxan Film Festival, which is like this psychic dark arts Wiccan film festival with all these great artists that took place in Oakland. That was very Oakland centric. Shapeshifter Cinema is one of my other total favorite Oakland things. It's Kathleen Quillinan and Gilbert Guerrero organized this monthly sort of expanded cinema series. It's so good. They have such great artists. Gilbert brews beer and they give it out, and it's a really solid program, and I really appreciate that. And the Oakland Museum, I think, is great, and maybe also the underdog of museums, but they have a very vibrant community and diverse base and a lot going on there, and I'm a member. I'd like to go hang out there if I have time. That's just a little sampling.
Is it? I mean, just because you were kind of just saying, like, you're, it's maybe the conversation of, like, why is art important? Why should people engage with it is not so interesting all the time. But is it ever, do you ever have any personal conflicted feeling of staying invested in art?
You know, I think we all have our moments when we get fed up with kind of the culture community we're a part of, because it can become super frustrating and feels like an uphill battle. We're 20 years in, you're like, am I still trying to advocate this very simple idea? And I think we all have moments of love, hate, right? But I think in the long run, no, I don't really feel like I would ever give up on it. And yeah, I feel like that's my job, is to advocate for the value of this thing that is so incredibly important. And yeah, if I'm going to keep doing that, I can't give up the steam, right? And I'm a pretty determined person, so I don't imagine that happening with me personally. I know that the art world is crazy, and there are parts of it that I personally hate and don't want anything to do with. And I think that's probably part of why I chose to stay focused on artists and to stay sort of focused on a non-commercial, non-museum kind of situation that's more focused on artist support. But I feel like it's only gotten worse. Like those systems of support are only breaking down and need more help than ever. So the cause is not going away. For sure. It's hard to figure out how to make a living doing that, right? Like, how do you have a life where you can live your life and have that be your work? And I think there aren't a lot of jobs out there that allow you to do that. So you have to be incredibly resourceful, tough, resilient, smart, and not scared to find money in order to get done what you want to get done. Like, I kind of like to think of the job that I had at SOEX as not necessarily like, you know, I had to figure out how to pay myself and everyone else every 2 weeks for the last 13 years. So it kind of feels like a little bit like freelance. You know, you got to like hustle, constant hustle to kind of make it move forward. And I feel like that's kind of how it is to be an artist. It's a constant hustle. You're constantly having to navigate a million different priorities, jobs, your studio practice. So it's sort of a creative pursuit that is not easy to balance. So. But you don't give it up, do you? No. So I feel like any creative, enterprising, determined person that is really committed to doing something is going to figure out how to make it happen.
Is there anything else that you would like listeners to know?
So don't forget to donate to Congratulations Pine Tree. Become a recurring member. $5 a month is all it takes for Kate and Maysoon to have all the equipment that they need. And maybe pay them for their time. They're doing this as a free donated volunteer service.
We should hire you on for us.
Cool.
Do you know of any cool new hip ways to get your art into the world?
No.
Try it out.
You know, I do have one more thing I want to say to listeners and you guys about Southern Exposure, which is, you know, I know Kate, especially, you have your concerns about the future. And I've always said this, like every letter, every fundraising letter we've ever sent out always says the same idea, that something is only as strong as the people who believe in it and participate it are willing to support it. And I think people don't always realize it's in their hands. It really is. It's only as strong as like the community wants it to be. People don't think it's relevant or important, it's going to fall apart. And so I feel like at moments of change, it's really important to step up and really value the things that are making your life here in the Bay Area better. And if that's something that you're concerned about, get involved, help, volunteer. And I'm not talking just about SOEX. I mean, anything that you feel like is at risk of not being there for you, that you really participate in and need, like your podcasts or other things. So I've always felt that people need to take more personal responsibility for the things that are there for them. And I feel like right now it seems like people are stepping up and really advocating more, but it seems like it always happens in the form of a crisis, yeah. Right? And not proactively, not in a moment of kind of strength. And it's unfortunate that that's how we have to position everything, but do it, people. Don't be scared.
Thank you for speaking with us today. And as always, congratulations. I still want to start my own Andrea Fraser Club.
Start it.
So if anybody's interested in that, we can read readings and make fun of psychoanalysis because it's silly. Oh, we talked in an episode earlier when I was talking about having to read all the psychoanalytic theory. We got a email in from a listener, my friend Rob from England.
Oh, yeah, Rob from England.
Okay, first of all, yeah, I fucking hate... P.S. Rob has a PhD in psychology.
Okay, good. He knows what he's talking about then.
First of all, yeah, I fucking hate psychoanalysis. It is such bullshit. though I wasn't going to pipe up till you were all, I think this is discredited. My problem is that it is not at all scientific and just made up by some weird Viennese cokehead. My theory is that artists and especially writers like it because it is more aesthetically pleasing to think of the psyche as made up of three parts than the reality, which is less intuitive. Also, the subconscious is an appealing idea because who doesn't like being deep and secretive and damaged?
Yeah. Rob, can you get us some free tickets over to England to meet up with you and do a couple shows?
I would love to go to England.
Let's go, man. He sounds fucking hysterical.
We just got to hide in the luggage of some of these Wattis people. I just wonder, like, I'm sure there's so many things, like, things that come up in art all the time that are only believed in art world.
In the art world? Totally.
Yeah.
I think so. We're all fucking delusional.
We get it. We do our heavy, deep, deep research, which is just Googling and listening to NPR.
And some YouTube. Little bit of YouTube sneaks in.
Yep. Okay, moving right along on the snarkiness locomotive.
Well, we're admitting to being part of that. I mean, I certainly am.
Where it's a snark attack.
So, yeah.
Is there other art stuff? I want to remind everyone that the real time and space residency application time is open until like November 1st or whatever. There'll be a link to that in the underworld. I didn't mention last time, but you get a stipend.
Fuck yeah.
So they'll pay you.
I'm applying for it.
The application
just
fee.
Just to get paid by someone.
Somebody was asking me if curators and writers and things can apply.
Probably, don't you think?
I say give it a shot. I don't actually know for
sure. Helpful.
Check out the website before you go for it. But also, P.S., it's only $7 to apply.
Also, alternative exposure applications are due September 24th. Apply for something. See
what
happens.
That's a good one, too, because you get a... the little mixer where you get to go meet everyone.
Here you go, liking the parties again.
Well, that's different because, like, you can actually chit-chat and you don't have to worry about your video being too quiet. Anything else coming up that the people need to know about?
Yeah, later tonight, you guys should head out to Mills. I'm going to just fucking
Wednesday
plug
night.
That shit.
Well, Mills Party.
Mills Party. There's a new show opening. We're super excited about
curated
it.
Curated by Christian Frock and Tanya Zimbardo.
It's called Public Works, Artists Interventions from the 1970s to Now.
Can you, I noticed you guys had those Adrian Piper cards.
Yes.
Can the viewer take one?
Yeah, we've got a shit ton.
Get an Adrian Piper card.
There's
little
a lot
piece of art history to keep in your wallet.
Oh my God, she's so good.
We got to get back on the ramble, Maysoon. Can we make a promise to do an October ramble?
We'll do a ramble for you.
For October.
We're going to ramble on.
So send us your pics if you've got a show coming up or if you just got a show you're excited about in October.
Yeah.
We'll put that in the old ramble.
Congratulations!
You listened to another episode of Congratulations You've Pine Tree.
Done it again.
And go ahead and email us, congratulationspinetree@gmail.com. Congratulationspinetree.com is our website. And you can tweet us at Pine Tree Podcast. Send us in stuff.
Until
next
time.
We're getting back on point with our interviewing.
Yeah, we got a good one coming up.
This year of our interviews has been a little sporadic. But we're getting back on point with all our stuff. We've got our ramble. Next week, we'll be back with our pick of the week. We got a few more segments we're going to try out. Thinking of having a correction segment. So thanks for listening. Have an artful week. Let's come up with our really good catchphrase.
Have an artful week. I'm good. Have some coffee.
Bye.
Bye.